You found the Love Fly podcast. I'm Paul Tizard, Fear of Flying Coach, and I've been helping nervous flyers since 1997. So in this podcast, you are going to find aviation experts, psychologists, coaches, enthusiasts, and people normal, just like you, who have overcome their fears. Welcome. And today we have, I can't believe I'm saying this, but we have a NASA astronaut, Andre. Welcome. Huge welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Definitely great to be here. Happy to share my story.
Oh, brilliant. So tell us all about yourself, because the most people in the community that we look after would never do what you're doing. We're very intrigued by it, but the thought of doing what you do. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, it's a good point. So Andre Douglas, and I grew up in a military family. My father was in the Coast Guard. My mom was in a few different services like the Marine Corps, Air Force, and the Army at different stages in her life. She was a nurse by trade, so she was always into helping people. And then my dad, he's in the Coast Guard, which is a very humanitarian service. But I come from a family of service. And at the same time, being in the service, we traveled to very many different places around the United States, but I come from mostly the East Coast of the United States. So born in Florida and lived all the way up amongst various states up to Connecticut. Had a little bit of time in Illinois. My dad was in graduate school, but I say the Mid-Atlantic area, the East Coast is where I'm from. And as a kid, I grew up doing many different things. I was always into something, always exploring. Did a lot of team sports in school, from soccer, basketball, ran track in college, and was in the marching band, exercising that creative part of my brain. And I loved every bit of it. I love learning. I love exploring new things. And, I was inspired to be an astronaut when I was actually 7. My mom, she got me into, Cub Scouts, and she introduced me to technology, got me my first telescope, and that's where I learned about stars and planets, and the curiosity just drove me to figure out, there's a profession out there where you can explore space, right, for a living. And so ever since then, I was just like, this is going to be it. And then my parents, my dad, he was a very hardworking person, or is a very hardworking person. He's retired now. That was a really good person to follow and understand how to work hard, because you can always have that dream to get there, but you have to put in the work to get there too. So it was a really good combination to be raised by that. So now that I, basically got through all the schooling and had a really good time, I went into the Coast Guard, just like my dad did, after I graduated from the Coast Guard Academy. And the Academy gets you a commission in the Coast Guard, but then also a degree. And I got a degree in mechanical engineering. And so from there, I was serving in the Coast Guard, did a bunch of operations in the Caribbean, and then I did some naval architecture work with the Coast Guard, and they sent me back to school for more degrees. And then after my active duty tour was over, I went into the reserves and I ended up working at an applied physics lab in Maryland at Johns Hopkins. And that was a lot of fun because I got to do a lot of Department of Defense research oriented things related to artificial intelligence, underwater unmanned vehicles, space systems, and a variety of other DoD payloads and systems. So my engineering background is what, was my strength, and that got me here to NASA, combined with the operational experience that I got in the Coast Guard, serving on ships and analyzing disasters. So that's kind of me in a nutshell. I don't want to talk too long on it, but, gives people an understanding of where I came from.
So are you allowed to say what you're working on at the moment?
Yeah. So right now, great question. I'm really excited about it. I'm basically working 4 different ground jobs here at NASA from the astronaut office. So the first ground job that I'm working is a program called Gateway. Gateway is going to be the new International Space Station that's going around the moon that helps monitor the astronauts while they're on the moon. and provides that mothership support for all the operations on the surface. And we're partnering with, you know, many different people, Canada, of course, the UAE, Japan, and ESA, the European Space Agency. So that's a lot of fun. I'm also doing pressurized rovers, which is being built by Japan, and we're collaborating together. That's where it's a rover that can sustain life support and people inside without the suit for about 30 days at a time.
Oh,
and
wow.
So it's like a, think of it as like a mobile International Space Station on the ground, right? So it's like a, you know, a ground mothership. And then I'm doing the Lunar Terrain Vehicle project. So we recently announced that there's three different contractors competing to design the Lunar Terrain Vehicle. And the Lunar Terrain Vehicle is like buggy, like think of a dune buggy where it's, you have to wear a pressurized suit to be able to ride in it. It's not going to protect you from the environment, but it helps us get from point A to point B faster instead of walking, you know, many kilometers. And then the last thing is I'm also helping out with the suits. So our spacesuits, there's two different types. There's going to be spacesuits for the mothership to do maintenance on the outside of the gateway. But then there's also going to be suits that are designed for walking on the moon, which it's a different use case because you have 1/6 gravity for the moon, but then you have zero gravity for the, you know, gateway space station operations.
That's all very, very cool, Andre. That's very cool. I bet you're like one of those people at dinner parties or, you know, like occasions. Everyone else goes, oh, no, we're sat next to him. Never, all our jobs are going to look boring now.
No. I just like, I tell people, you know, I was driven by math and science, and wherever I can find how to apply that and use it, this is where I'll be. So,
yeah. So what's the best bit about what you do?
You know, it's hard for me to choose because I like everything about this job because, you know, as I was mentioning before, growing up and doing many different things, I had many different interests. And so I almost need a job where I'm constantly doing something new almost every day, every hour. You know, like my week last week was, you know, actually I just flew a jet today before doing this. And then the other night I was doing a practice rock yard run where I'm practicing how to do lunar operations in the field with the new suits. These suits are analogs, but they'll get us a better understanding of how to use them. I've had two Russian classes that I've taken over the last 2 days. And then, you know, I'm doing other classes related to systems and various things at NASA. So there's something going on every day that's different, and it keeps my brain going.
Yeah, it sounds like it's pretty full on, actually, isn't it? Crikey. So how many are there of you working on, you know, because there's obviously some projects coming up next year, which we all know about, but I'm guessing there's a massive build-up, and I'm trying to get a sense of how many of you are working on these various, you know, moon-based projects and space station stuff, being very technical.
Yeah, so that's a good question. Astronaut office right now is only around about, you know, high 40s, low 50s in number, and so most of us are assigned and preparing for a flight or up on the station. And that really only leaves like, you know, less than 20 to do a lot of the ground jobs. But, you know, we interface with many other aspects of NASA and other divisions. So, you know, one program like Gateway might have hundreds, if not thousands of people from different aspects of it working that one project, that one program. But within the astronaut office, like we might only have one or two people dedicated to that program that tries to cover all aspects of it from, you know, interfacing with the potable water dispenser to understanding electronic boxes on the outside of the gateway to, you know, this hardcore systems engineering or just, you know, what type of, you know, garments are we going to use in certain activities. So like we're covering a broad spectrum within one program, but there's only, you know, one or two of us at the most.
So tell us a little bit about then what happens next for you. I mean, you sound like you're flying jets and you're doing all sorts of stuff. So I'm trying to get a sense of, you know, what you'll be doing. Will we see you on the TV doing stuff? Or are you going to be kind of doing lots and lots of stuff around the outside and we won't see you? How will it work for you?
Oh, yeah. So, my daily routine is I have to maintain my operational readiness. So flying the jets, doing the underwater spacewalks in the neutral buoyancy lab. We have to do so many of those a year. We have to practice our Russian, We also have to do engagements with the community, just like I am today, which has been awesome. I actually have done maybe like two or three of those over the last few weeks and reaching out there and explaining our story, our mission to everybody so they understand what we're going through and also what we're trying to achieve. And then at the same time, I'm preparing for a big test that's happening. Actually, starting next weekend, we'll be going out to Arizona to do the geology training that's going to help us prepare for how we're going to do operations on the moon. And so there'll probably be some public affairs there that will do some videos and documentary that will highlight that. So you might see me there. And then, you know, any of the shots that we do from training and for the PR will also be available to the public, you know, on all the various social media platforms and internet sites. So it's an exciting time because we do this when we're not flying, and then eventually we'll be getting assigned, and that even, you know, gets us in the mix more with being more in the public and talking about the flight and things like that. Mm. And our class, there's about 12 of us that did the last astronaut class that came through. So there was 10 U.S. Astronauts and then 2 astronauts from the UAE. And nearly all of us will have an assignment within the next year or so, because our office is so small compared to what it was back in the shuttle days. And we have so many more missions and vehicles, so they need to get us out there.
So when you say an assignment, what might that mean for you?
Oh, yeah. So that means basically, you know, you either fly to the International Space Station that's up there now, or you may get a chance to fly on the Orion, which is going to the moon. And right now we have astronauts assigned to Artemis 2, which is the first manned flight of the Orion capsule, because Artemis 1 was just all automated. And then Artemis 3 will likely have assignments within the next year or so based on the schedule of when that mission would happen. And so, you know, we've been told, as somebody who kind of just finished training at the baseline level, it's unlikely you would, you know, go to the Artemis program right off the bat. You want people who have been in space before likely to, you know, be able to handle, you know, the effects of space and, you know, push the bounds. So we would likely, in my opinion, go to the ISS within the next year or so, as far as like you start the training in a year or so, but then it takes 2 full years to get fully trained. And then you go to space.
Marcus, do you think back to when you think at 7 years old, you decided that, and here you are doing it? Remarkable, isn't it? Do you ever sort of pinch yourself and think, I can't believe I'm actually...
Yeah, it was every other day. it's a dream come true. And, you know, a lot of people mention how positive I am, and I'm a glass half full type guy. And, you know, how can I not right now be that? Yeah. But I think getting here, that was also a thing. You know, if you believe in yourself and you have positive thoughts and, you know, you invest the time and the work, you know, nearly anything can happen. And so that's where
I see a big speaking career coming your way. You keep coming out with stuff like that.
Oh, thanks.
So when you think about going into space, does that bring any fear for you or any of your colleagues?
So for me personally, I think there's always going to be, you know, some sort of fear. And I think fear in general is in just about every being that's here on Earth. You know, we've got a history of evolving and, you know, running from predators and surviving, you know. I think it's just like anybody who would say, you know, do you ever experience being happy, sad, right? We have these emotions because over time we've been able to have experiences that have shaped us. So
yes,
when it comes to this job, and you look at a lot of the backgrounds that people have, they've usually had a lot of various experiences to be able to learn themselves in environments that are not very common, right?
Yes.
And so I think we've been trained by our professions to, I would say, handle that fear, to, you know, acknowledge it, but then put mitigations in place or tactics to overcome it when you need to. And then, you know, I think it's human to be, you know, and experience fear and acknowledge it. Otherwise, something may be, you know, off, and that's also okay. But at the same time, I think it's we shouldn't be afraid to talk about fear. I think that's important.
Yeah. Now, so I was going to probe then, because I do think you're right. It's the part of the human condition. Do you have any strategies if you notice yourself getting anxious, thinking I've got to do this thing, maybe underwater, or I've got, you know, anything that you think is beyond something you've experienced before? How do you steady yourself?
Yeah, so I think there's many different ways, and throughout my type of experiences, I'll try to break down a few. So when it comes to environments where, you know, you're doing physical work and or you have a physical resource limitation, like, for instance, oxygen when you're flying at a T-38 at high altitudes and you have this mask on and it could be very hot in the cabin for some reason. And my first thing to do is just control my breathing rate. Okay. Same thing for whatever I'm swimming, like not even related to NASA, but whenever I'm swimming and I switch from freestyle to breaststroke and I have a different breathing cadence to where I'm breathing in a lot faster on a freestyle, but then I have to slow it down to a breaststroke. Like there's anxiety there because you're not, you know, you go from getting that oxygen at a certain rate to slowing down and it makes you almost want to panic. But then you just have to remember, like, trust your body that it will adapt and that you will slow it down. So that's one area. But then also, like, going back to the jet example, if you find that you're working too hard and you're feeling like you can't breathe, like, slow down your breathing. And if you can close your eyes, close your eyes. But if you can't close your eyes, focus on one point without losing situational awareness on your mission and just, you know, kind of block out things. Let your senses kind of catch up to one area. And those are techniques that help me to kind of calm down in the moment and then think about the basics, right? Don't think about what color was somebody's shirt today. Don't think about what you had for breakfast. You have to focus on what's the nearest thing or threat that is going to, you know, incapacitate you, whatever you want to call it. And so those are things that I've learned, not just here at NASA, but, you know, being on ships and driving ships, doing things with the DOD from my past, even in sports teams in high school and college, like when you have to overcome that one, you know, critical moment in the game or one critical PR that you need to get, you have to focus. So,
yeah. Oh, that's nice, actually. There's so much I want to ask you. So I would ask you at the end if you've got any sort of tips for nervous flyers, because I think what you're doing is beyond what most of us will get to do, and certainly probably with my lifetime. But what do you think will happen as a result of doing this next lunar missions and all the stuff that you're working on now? What do you think it will mean for commercial aviation in terms of things we might learn or improve?
So I think it's a really good thing to think about. And, you know, with space exploration, there's been so many different opportunities with technology transfer from what we've done here at NASA to, you know, the things that are out there in the public and the commercial sector. So there's going to be numerous things that we learn, I would say, more so in maintaining a presence in lunar orbit and on the lunar surface that deals with potentially equipment that's back here on Earth. You know, there's been many different commercial companies that are coming online and coming up with innovative ways to do the same mission, maybe different ways. So we have, in my opinion, a bigger chance to come up with things that apply back to Earth, because there's, you know, probably 16, 17 different companies working towards this one goal instead of just NASA alone. So I think that's really exciting because there are so many more brains on the problem now, and people are bringing in other industry knowledge to NASA, which is also creating diverse thought. And then hopefully, and I believe that NASA and the space exploration sector and industry is going to come up with some really unique things that help people back on Earth. So, yeah, you know, without getting very specific, but that just see that the way that the infrastructure has changed from the Apollo era to now, it creates that opportunity.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, I know you've got to go. One last tip for anybody who's a nervous flyer, based on your, you know, your extensive experience, anything that you'd say then to think about?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked that. And one thing I'll say is, especially for, you know, somebody like me who, you know, I loved watching movies about flying like Top Gun in the United States, you know, Tom Cruise, right? But I've always liked to fly, and I never flew until I got to NASA, right? And but I flew a lot throughout my career and growing up with all the travel and things that I'd done across the States. And I think the more that you fly, the more comfortable you get with it. That's the first thing. The other thing that happens is I started to understand the physics of flying, right? Understanding if you're going very fast at a big jet that has large wings, you know, the air around you is not as dense as it is now. Like, it's very compressed. It's very stable. And so even though you see nothing under you, like, you're being held up by a tremendous force. The other thing is that there are very many different safety protocols and procedures in the aviation community to help protect us. And not only that, there are specific emergency procedures that pilots execute to make sure that we can get back safely. There's a lot of planning involved to make sure too, like, you know, if we talk about running out of fuel, they've already planned like 5 or 6 different divert airports to land.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that go on beyond walking in the door and grabbing seat number 12C. Like, there's a lot more that goes there to make sure we're safe. And so just trying to remember some of those principles about, there's a lot of physics going on that helps us stay in the air, and then the checklist that pilots follow to make sure we're safe, and all the industry standards that are out there, it'll help. And then just real quick before we go, going back to that one point about focusing on maybe one thing and controlling the breathing to help with the anxiety in the moment, I think is very, very important in distracting yourself also with, you know, either watching those videos on the provided screens or, you know, reading a book, just kind of not just focusing on the flight helps.
Andre, absolutely brilliant stuff. We wish you all the very best. We shall be looking out to see you now and go, oh, we know him. And I'll let you know when this is released. But thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are, but very, very grateful. And thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me, and wishing you guys all the best.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Love Fly podcast. I hope you're finding it helpful with your fear of flying. Now, if you do need some extra tailored help, you can go to our website, lovefly.co.uk, and click on the courses button. You'll find more help there, such as our 30-day program and our on-demand webinar. Thanks again. See you next time.